What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
At Kroger, we know the minute a tomato is picked off the vine, the fresh timer starts. The sooner we get our produce to you, the fresher it is. That's why we've completely overhauled our process to shorten the time from harvest to home for our tomatoes, strawberries, and salads. Because we know how much you love fresh produce, we give you more time to enjoy your tasty fruits and veggies at home. So whether you're shopping in-store, picking up, or prefer delivery, we're committed to bringing you the freshest produce possible. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Oh, and if you're wondering where James III is, James's phone is not working.
Yeah.
So he can't call me.
Literally for an hour, we've been trying to get him on the phone. It's because this dude doesn't pay his cell phone bills.
How you gonna swindle him like that? How you gonna swindle him like that?
This dude wakes up late, don't know where he is. He's got a broke cell phone company.
Yeah, I love that.
A cheap phone. And so when he called, we couldn't hear him.
Nope.
So that's it. I mean,
we tried.
We tried. He's not here.
We tried.
And he's mad about it, but it's honestly nobody's fault except for himself.
Yeah. We did everything we could do on our end, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not our fault. He's in LA and just, I don't know. Mm. But these other, I mean, guys, I want to review the darkest minds, but I don't know if we'll ever get to it. And Skyscraper 2.
Yeah, I definitely want to. Well, you know what it is? Not saying you only can pick one Amandala movie, but she's the lead of, Monster Ones. But she has a movie that, like, we got to review. The Hate U Give, which is based on another book.
Oh, I just saw the trailer for that.
Like, she's the lead of that. I mean, that's the one. Like, not saying you have to pick one YA book to do.
Right.
But if you had to, that's the one we got
to
do.
This is what I wanted to talk about. I'm sorry it took so long for me to get here, but have you noticed that there are so many movies and shows and stuff where, like, one of the main plot points is police, like, shooting a black man?
Yep.
It's, like, so mm-hmm. in our culture that, like, everybody's, like, doing something about it.
We get to when we talk about this movie, because I feel a strong kind of way about it. And I also felt some way in real life where I get that it happens, but also for some reason, I feel like it's a little bit of awareness, which is dope, but it almost feels like you're normalizing it. You're making it like,
right.
I feel like people aren't, if you saw a video, like if we were right here right now and like a message popped up on CNN and there was another black dude getting gunned down,
yeah.
I feel like we're desensitized to it a little bit. I think
we
feel pity, but it's like, fuck, again.
Yeah. It's like the two extremes. There's this hyper awareness now. And before it was, you know, we were just blind spotting to it.
Wait, what?
And we're trying to meet somewhere in the middle. You know, it's like,
that's not,
like, I don't want it to be everywhere, but I also don't want to be blind spotting too. You know,
I thought we were having like a real conversation.
Well, we are. Like, I just don't want it. You know, I don't want the other end.
I thought we were really doing a thing, and then, like, as I'm listening to you talk about a real topic, you just did that corny ass segue. Is that what just happened to me right now?
It was blind spotting.
Good. Just start the show.
Jonathan Braylock,
James III,
Drum Milligan.
What more can I say?
You know what it is.
Black men can jump.
In Hollywood.
actors, man.
Black actors. All right, all right, all right, all right, all right.
Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Hollywood City. Oh, man. I would do James's one, but it makes me sad. Because it's like, it's
definitely
gunshots.
Definitely some gunshots.
It'd be gunshots. And I don't want to do it. Let's get a moment of silence instead.
Okay.
All right. Cool.
All right, listen. My name is Jonathan Braylock.
I'm Dry Milligan.
And James III isn't here. But if he was here, you wouldn't have heard his name.
Nope.
Now, if you're listening to this for the first time, welcome.
Oh, yeah.
We are a film review podcast. We review the films of leading black actors and talk about them in the context of race. And
damn right.
Oh, okay. He's just going to interrupt
me. I was trying to help you.
Got it. And diversity in Hollywood.
Hell, yeah.
And we have been doing this for quite some time. Today, we are reviewing the film Blindspotting.
Yup. Blind spotting. When you see it twice, but you got a blind spot so you can't see on the sides. Is that what she said? I don't remember.
Nope. And then this film stars David Diggs from Hamilton fame. Did you ever see Hamilton?
No.
I saw it three times.
Saw it three times?
Yeah, three. Okay, and this film was also written...
With him? With David? Like with the original cast too?
I saw it twice with the original cast. This film also stars... Damn. Rafael Casal, who is also the co-writer of the script with David Diggs, and
co-producer everything.
His first movie role, first feature film.
This dude's gonna blow up after this.
And the cast is unknown. There's no famous people in this cast at all.
No, not one. The only person who's in it is Newman.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Newman's in it.
Newman. Also, if you're like, I used to obsess over this show called The League that was on FX.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the love entrance for David in this movie, Janina, she used to, they used to like compete on, it was a football show where like it was about fantasy football. They used to compete for the Shiva, which was like this trophy.
It's like a bunch of, it was like Nick Kroll.
Yeah,
and
a bunch of white dudes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Shiva was based on one of their friends from high school, and this woman, Janina, was the real life Shiva. Which also, low key, now I'm realizing it, is mad racist. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So, this is an indie film. We sometimes don't do films that have such a limited release, but we just had to. We had to review this one. It's been out for 3 weeks. It's estimated to have made around $3.5 million so far, or 3.2. I'm not sure how much it costs to make. I don't have any.
Can't be that.
Couldn't find it. I mean, couldn't be that much. I think it premiered at Sundance, right?
Yeah, it premiered at Sundance, and that's where all the hype started.
And
might have opened Sundance, as a matter of fact.
But the reviews for it are pretty great. Let me see exactly what it has. It has 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Damn.
And what else to say? I mean, that's, you know, you have a bunch of these indie films doing, you know, getting a lot of buzz. This is one of them.
Yeah,
you know,
we did Sorry to Bother You,
yeah,
which is great. Think about that. Yeah. To go from Sorry to Bother You to this,
mm-hmm.
to like. I guess, you know, Black Klansman, which I understand isn't an indie, but I mean, technically, yeah, Monkey Bone is. The one produced. It kind of is, right? Yeah, like, Monkey Bone did it. It's just
like
so cool.
I think an indie is just, like, not a major film studio.
Yeah.
Doing.
So I'm like, yo, to have three of those things come out in, like, what, 2.5 months of each other? All three different types of movies?
Yeah.
That kind of talk about the same thing a little bit is very fascinating to me. It's like, yeah, you can talk about the thing and have different angles of it. This one is so hyped. I saw this movie in an all-white theater again.
How? Where are you going?
I went to Lincoln Center, bruh. Lincoln Center.
I mean, Lincoln Center.
But it was young. It was young. Young. I was next to, like, two young white women. And when I say they were on an emotional roller coaster the whole movie, like, you know what? I dare somebody to cut their lip and say black people are the only ones who scream at theaters. Because these white girls, when they're, no. I like, okay. It's not just danger's us.
It ain't just us.
You want to go first? Cause I...
Yes, sure. Okay, so blind spotting.
Initial thoughts, John.
Initial thoughts. I love David Diggs. Mm-hmm. So I was excited to see this film. I remember seeing the trailer, and I wasn't so thrilled by the trailer. Because the trailer actually made... If you go and watch... Oh, by the way, if you're listening to this for the first time, we will spoil the movie.
Spoil it, baby!
So if you haven't seen the film and are planning on seeing it, please pause and go watch it and then come back and listen. Otherwise, continue. Continue on. So yeah, the trailer of the movie is... It feels like it focuses on the fact that he witnessed this shooting. And I thought it was about, like, he witnessed this police shooting, and then, like, he's trying to, like, stay, you know, keep his name clear because he's on parole, and he just wants to survive the last few days that he's on parole. And it was almost like a horror, almost like, you know, you saw a lot of the shots where there was the shot of him like screaming in the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
So this movie wasn't really that, which was great for me. Like it was.
Yeah, that was cool.
I liked that. I liked that the movie, that was a central plot point in the movie, but it wasn't the whole movie. And like the movie, it's actually about these two friends and their relationship and their journey, like where they're heading in life, how society treats them, how the gentrification of their neighborhood is making each of them feel, and also the choices that they want to make and where they want to go, the directions that they want to head. So that was really great. Okay, I'm dancing around. I love this movie.
Okay, but I see how you feel about it.
I thought it was really, really good. I thought the performances were superb. I really liked David Diggs. But I guess just because I was seeing him for the first time, Raphael was so great. I just thought he like really nailed this character. Who, I mean, it may be very close to who he is or a part of who he was. And this movie showcasing that transformation that happened in his own life. It's possible because he co-wrote this. Either way, I have a cousin who lives in San Francisco. So the Bay Area, like close to Oakland. And he is, oh my God, almost exactly like this dude.
Oh, for real?
Yes. Cause he's like from my mom's side of the family, so he's white, but he talks exactly the same way. His wife is black. You know, he has a biracial son. He has the same contempt for all of the, you know, tech people coming into the Bay Area. Of how much San Francisco is changing. He has a contempt for the police, you know, and I'm almost positive he owns a gun. So it was like all of his stuff, I was just like, oh my God, this is so real. Like, this is so, so real. And I really liked how they humanized him. I liked how they humanized David. I liked how they humanized... Everybody had a character, it felt to me like everyone had a full, rich, deep character. There was no character that was just like servicing the plot. You know what I mean?
I agree with that.
Like even with the women, like the, you know, the David's ex girlfriend, like she was one way. You know, Raphael's wife, she was another way. You know what I mean? Like, and they didn't seem, they were different, even though they both had conflicts with their respective partners. At certain points in the movie, their characters were different. The way that they came off were different. You know what I mean? Like, they just had a different feel to them. And then even the police officer, you know, it's really easy to just be like, this is just a horrible... And he is still, right? Like, a horrible person within the world of the movie. But they showed, basically how They show that fact that he was a coward, you know, and yeah. using force because of his just racist fear that he had, essentially. So, and the rapping was cool. I thought, you know, that was used moderately enough so that it wasn't too much. And the damn, that little girl was really cute.
Little girl.
Raphael's daughter.
Son.
Or was it?
It was a boy.
Was it a boy?
I think so. I could be wrong. I thought it was a boy.
I thought it was a girl.
Still a cute kid, either way.
I guess we won't determine gender. And Tayshia Campbell.
So random. So utterly random.
So that was a weird, funny scene. Yeah. Anyway, that's how I felt. I really liked it, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, man. I thought it was a good movie, but I don't like it. I don't like it. I've been thinking about this after watching it. Midway through the movie, I was like, I don't like this. It was a thing, and I was like, okay, hopefully it can get over it. Towards the end, I was like, I dig it a little bit.
I think you're right. I think that was a boy.
I think it is. You know what it is? I definitely think this movie is like close to DeVee and Raphael, so I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
But something about it, and it's just, and again, the movie is a good movie. It came off for me unauthentic, and I know that's not what they were going for. I get it, and the thing is, I thought Raphael was hands down like my favorite part of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they were trying to touch on a lot of topics. They're talking, you know, about police brutality. They're talking about gentrification. Also, the thing with Raphael talking about being like a white dude in the hood and what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation about whether or not to call him the N-word at the end came out of nowhere, but I kind of understand where that comes from because one of my best friends is white, and I slip up and call him nigga all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I've done it, and I've been trying to be conscious of it now. I think my main issue might be with DeVee. And the thing is, and his performance is good, but something about it. Okay, remember how we were talking about Superfly? And Superfly was a good movie, but Trevor felt too young for that part, right?
Right.
But his performance was still good in the part. Like, for some reason, DeVee in this part, yeah, I get he's from the Bay. I get he's from the area, but something, the way, I don't know. It's something about how he presented it. Like, I definitely could tell he was putting in the work for this part, but something about him in the part wasn't believable for me. It just felt like, because even if you're not the hard dude in the hood, there's a weight of the hood on you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I guess he had it at points, but for some reason, for a lot of the movie, I was like, something wasn't connecting for me in particular. But the movie was good. It's just, it was hard for me to watch because they did everything right. They had a movie, like you said, John. Like, I love that the movie wasn't about him witnessing, it wasn't solely about him witnessing police brutality.
Right.
And I love that that wasn't the topic just even in the conversation because it is now normalized. At least it's always been for African-Americans who come from a certain area, mm-hmm. even if you don't. So I'm happy it was addressed like that. I'm happy that there was comedy throughout the movie because that's how it would be with your boys. You know what I'm saying? Like, something bad will happen and then someone's going to crack a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the directing was good, but this just something. Like, I love the shots of, like, their homeboy who also was Uber driver. Like, every time that dude showed up, I just thought it was hilarious. God,
that was...
It's just...
Amazing.
And the thing is, sucks because I'm not even saying they needed to have picked one thing. So hopefully during this podcast, I can figure out why I don't like it. It didn't... And this, I know why people praising it. It didn't feel... It didn't feel honest. I'm sorry. I know it probably was to them. It probably is, but for some reason, it just didn't.
Are you saying that you didn't believe that David would be going through the things that he was going through in the movie?
It felt like he did everything right, but I didn't believe. This is what it is. And this is so dumb because it is a movie and it's a performance. I felt like I was watching a performance. I felt like I was watching him perform for me. And then when they did the rapping portion, Like, I think the part that I dislike the most about the movie is the part people love, well, probably will love about the movie. His rap monologue at the end with the cop. I did something I probably never have done in a movie, and I'm happy no one was with me. I audibly grunted, and I felt myself looking sideways at it. And I've never, and the thing is, like, it's, I get it, so I'm not trying to diss it. It just wasn't for me. I was like, right. Literally, in my mind was like, nigga, what? Like, I frowned and I looked, I remember feeling my head turn sideways and being like, what the? I remember it, dude. I remember it, and I know that wasn't the action because he was performing his ass off. Like, I'm not,
right.
Yeah, the tears.
But it was like, it's a heightened. It's non-realism at that point.
Yeah, and the thing is, and I get it. I get it.
Right.
Like, but for some reason, it just, that made that scene unrealistic to me because everyone but, and I totally get it was written that way, but the cop was playing it real. Like, was it Raphael was playing that shit real. And so was DeVee, but the rapping, and then also how he was handling the gun. You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand his character wasn't one who handled the gun, but like, you closing your eyes. This cop has already reached for his gun. This cop has already killed the black dude before. And I'm like, you closing your eyes. You're like, being that angry at somebody, there was so much carelessness. And maybe I'm clearly overanalyzing it, but it was just something that immediately stood out to me. I'm like, this is care. Everything you're doing in this scene is careless to a person who would kill you. A person who you're terrified of and you're angry at. It just felt very...
I think it's fair to say that it's pretty careless to point a gun at a police officer
in
their own home.
True. That part in itself is, but I'm like, if you're going to do that, we have now officially crossed the line and I'm not closing my eyes multiple times and I'm not... Like, he literally had points where...
I'm just saying that he is in a careless state. Like, he's... He's doing things that don't make sense. But he's also rapping, which isn't real. Like, he wouldn't rap in real life. Like,
no.
It's a poetic thing that he's doing. And that's who DeVee is.
Which makes sense. But I guess in my mind, I'm like, if we're going to do that, then we should have been rapping. And I guess they kind of, but he wasn't like the best. The white dude was the best at it. I'm like, if we're going to have this full-on rap at the end, then,
yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, let's go through it.
Oh, man.
Bad,
I hate the thing is,
too bad James is there.
I know, because I know James, just so everyone knows, James said he likes this movie, and I do not want to bash this movie. I want people to know I don't like it, but it's not for anyone's fault. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just a movie that just didn't reach me in the right way.
Right. It wasn't your style.
It wasn't even that, dude. I didn't even mind the rapping, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't even that. It just something about it felt, and I get there from the Bay. Like, I'm reading this article right now, and DeVee Diggs lived four blocks away from where Oscar Grant was murdered in 2009, basically Fruitvale Station, if you know Oscar Grant stories. He was like, he lived four blocks away. So I can, I know this is real for him, but for some reason, I think it was the performance, man. I think it, at the end, I could definitely see in his eyes everything that was affecting him, but for some reason, it just, I don't know, man. It just didn't connect. So
this movie start, I mean, okay, there's so many things I do really like about this film, and the directing I really love too. We're going to talk about that. The film essentially starts with, we see that he has 3 days left on his parole, right? Like, there's like a title card about that. Yeah. They're in Oakland. I can't remember the exact beginning of this film. Like, does it start with him running? Does it start
First day on parole is him running, and, then he goes through the routine of picking up his boy.
Yeah, like, he has a routine of, like, he wakes up at, like, 6:25, he jogs through like a graveyard in like a park. He picks up his boy Raphael,
yep.
Who has he has a son, has a wife. They work at a moving company, and
Colin and Miles. I love the name Miles.
And they're already like talking about how gentrified this area is. So they have this fun. I mean, there are so many moments where I was laughing out loud. Like, I know this is kind of a little bit out of order, but they go into the bodega and they're like, and then they're like looking, and then he like sees green juice, and he's like, "The hell is this?" And he's like, "Green juice." And he's like, "Why do you have this in here?" He's like, "No, man, people like it. It's healthy. It's good for you." And then David's like, "All right, I'll take it. How much is it?" And he's like, $10. And they both are like, $10?
Yeah.
What is in here? The blood of Christ.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yep. Like, that's how it starts. It really does. Like, that's how it starts. It's like just small things like, oh, we're going to have $10 green juices in here now. Like,
and that's a corner
bodega. Instead of like the dollar tea. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I did really like the other stuff. You know, okay, now I get it. Like, I think I love the gentrification stuff. And, like, where I grew up in D.C. is completely gentrified, which now Chocolate City is now not Chocolate City, right? That's one of the jokes that black people have. And I think this movie touches on, like, they touch on gentrification, right? But I feel like we don't make a statement on any of the things we touch on. Like, we don't, which I get it. Like, they leave everything open-ended. Like, it's, they kind of say gentrification is bad, but it's happening. They kind of say police brutality is bad, but they don't give you, like, an answer how to solve it or anything, which I get is hard to – you don't want to tell people – you don't want to give people an answer. You want them to kind of be on it on their own. But for some reason, I felt like if you're going to touch on all these issues, you needed to have make – you needed to say how you felt. Like, I was curious to know, for instance, exactly how the movie, as it ended, felt about gentrification. Like, is it still bad? Because the V kind of was like, cool with it a little bit.
Well, I think the thing that he, I think what it was trying to say, so you had Raphael's character who, he is ostensibly white for this, in this film. And his character is like, he hates that this is happening. And he talks about it all the time. He hates that there's these Jews. He hates all the hipsters. Like, he keeps making jokes about it. He hates that this gentrification is happening. And David, like, is like mildly agreeing with him, but at times he's like, but then David like gets the green juice and he's like, you know, not eating. Oh, I'm sorry. This film started with them in the car. That's what this film started with.
Did it?
Yes. The film started with them in the car. It was like David in the back.
Yes. It started
black
with
dude
the, front, started with
the
Uber
white
driver.
Dude in front. And they're just there and they're like, they're smoking and they're just driving. And then at some point, he goes, whoa, is this a gun? And he, like, pulls out a gun. And, like, he's like, oh, yeah, man. And then David's like, oh, no. Like, let me out the car. Like, I only got 3 days left on my parole. Like, I'm not being in this car. And then all of a sudden, like, this comedy scene happens where they just keep pulling out guns. And at a certain point, there are, like, six, like, all three of them are holding two guns in their hand.
And he's like, hey, man. He's like, man, don't point at me. Man, it's nothing in this gun. It's not noted.
He's like, nah, bro, that's loaded.
Yeah, definitely loaded. Those guns are definitely loaded. And it's so
there are funny. So many guns. And then when they finally, and then yeah, because he had his phone up here, and when he had his phone up there, I was like, oh, is he an Uber driver? And then at some point, he's like, ding. He goes, ah, y'all got to get out. I gotta pick up a ride. He's like, wait, are you working for Uber right now? He's like, yeah, brah. And then
any money, any side hustle I can get.
And then they go, okay. And he goes, and then they get out of the car, and you see the car. It's like this purple convertible on the biggest.
I love it.
Tires, like huge rims, like 44-inch rims, and it's huge. It has hydraulics, and it's like a monster car. And it's so ridiculous.
And also, it's crazy because they're eating like these burgers, and Miles is like spit one out,
right?
And for some reason, I'm thinking the way it was shot, that they were going to be in like some abandoned parking lot or something. Nah, they just in front of.
They
the,
were it, just in the quick.
And the quick was it quick way.
Quick way.
Yo,
right.
I will say this.
And I realized, and at first I was like, what? They're just smoking. And then I was like, oh, right. Smoking's legal in California.
Yeah. Also, I just love the joke that Miles keeps doing, which is, this isn't the same thing.
Yeah,
I don't get
way.
It. It's supposed to be quick and around the way. And like, he's like, it's quick way.
Yeah. And one of the things was like, they're like, quick way, like, it's like potato wedges? What is this? Who's mommy ketchup? Like, and he goes, yo, I like these potato wedges, though. I ain't gonna lie. Like, these potato wedges are good. And then he bites the burger, spits it out. And he's like, what the hell is this? And he's like, oh, that's a vegan burger. And he goes, a vegan burger? yo, man, why you give me a vegan burger? He goes, did you specify that you wanted meat? What? He goes to try to fight him and defeat Stas. And he's like, why do I have to specify?
Honestly, I thought that was
good. I want meat.
I mean,
I was dying.
I will say this.
You have to specify.
You want meat.
That you want meat. Otherwise, the regular burger is a vegan burger.
That's such a nuanced joke. You know what I mean? That's such a nuanced joke about. But it's so interesting, man, because.
Oh, my God.
It's so funny because, again, when I watched this theater, when I went to go see the theater, basically, I'm in a movie with a bunch of hipsters, right? Which this movie's making fun of. And at one point, because I was getting next to these two women, they were kind of like making little jokes about the hipsters. And I'm looking like at how they're physically dressed.
Right.
I'm like, you do realize that you're dressed like every woman at this party. Like then when he goes to the party later, I'm like, you're just like everyone at this party.
Right.
And so I was having a difficult time in the movie, I think because of
that's why I really love the end of this movie, because it makes so much sense that Raphael, the black dude at the party is like, you're a hipster. You're wearing a t-shirt that says, kill a hipster, save a life, or something like that. But that's an ironic shirt that a hipster would wear.
Yeah.
A hipster would wear that shirt. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's like, he's got tats. Hipsters have tats. He had, like, even his haircut.
Cut,
I was like, you have a hipster haircut. Like, you're talking that way. It's like, you're doing things that, like, it was just so, he was like, he hated the fact that he was being, like, labeled and, like, pushed in this corner with these people that he didn't want to be called. But that mirrors what David was talking about. Is like, yeah, but, like, people call me a nigga, and I'm getting labeled in this way, but, like, you're the nigga.
Yeah. Let me tell you something funny. That part was my favorite part of the movie. And the thing is, I know they couldn't have done the whole movie about that, but, like, that is what, like, and again, like, because like, when that scene happens, and yeah, we can go back to the beginning, but when that scene happens and the fight happens and they have that conversation at the end, and it's like, you know, DeVito's like, yo, can I call you nigga? Like, when it first happened, I was like, this is fucking random. Like, I was like, when he started saying, it's like, say it. And I was like, first off, nigga, like, for some reason, I'm like, again, one of my best friends is white, and there's at no point when we be like, if we're fighting over something, call me a nigga. Like, what the fuck? Like, that part I think is stupid.
Right.
But when we finally get into the argument of why Miles acts like that and how he is from the hood, how he has to, like, because basically, like, the interesting part is Miles is from the hood, but he's a white dude from the hood. So he got niggas testing him in the hood because he's white. He got a black girl, a black son, and then he got other white dudes testing him outside of that world, which you can't relate to. So to me, like, not saying I want the movie to be about a white dude, but, like, that is fascinating. But then also, David talking about, yeah, I'm a big black dude. I'm a big black dude, and everyone thinks I'm a nigga, even though I'm not. That is the crux of what I thought, not what I thought it was going to be, but, like, that's what I want to see. I wanted to see how these two navigated that type of world, where we could see early on, like, little things of, like, Miles having to overly defend himself. And yes, it was in the performance, but it was, like, it was a lot happening in this movie. But to me, that was the movie.
Right. Like, I mean, but
that should have been the movie.
I do think they set up, like, that scene wouldn't have been as powerful if they weren't doing that throughout the movie, which they were. Like, and then the point at the end, what David is making is that, because I think the reason he was like, call me a nigga, was because what's Raphael? Whatever. Raphael's character was
Miles, yeah.
His name is Miles?
Colin is David. Miles is.
Got it. So yeah, Miles is saying, you know, like, you didn't have my back, you know, you're selling out, like, you're freaking drinking green juices, like, you're conforming, like, you're assimilating to this other thing, and I'm trying to keep it real, like, and you're not hanging with me, like, and David is like, dude, even if I'm doing all of that stuff, like, I can be doing all of these things that you're accusing me of, and it doesn't matter to the police. Like, you can act this way, and it's safe for you to act this way. It's not safe for me to act the way that you are acting. So, like, he was saying, like, so what else? What's not safe? It's not safe for a white person to call a black person the N-word. And he was like, if you feel so safe acting this way, then call me the N-word. You're not going to, because you know that there is a difference. There is a difference between you and me, even though we grew up in the same area, we like the same music, we talk the same way, we have the same friends, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, we both beat up a dude, and I was the one who got put in jail, not you. And I'm the
he
one who
say all that?
No, he didn't say that, but that, I think that was like the context
of
it. Like
the
subtext. The
Because that makes, again, like that all makes sense. And like that, man, to me, that's what the magic was, man. Like that whole situation, like the mere fact they went to that party, the fact that like I
man, that that
and
that
and
was the him getting called out by that black dude for being a hipster was the funniest thing, because you could see it in Raphael's. Yeah. I mean, his acting was so good. It crushed him.
But the thing, to me, what I found, like, again, that whole sequence was dope, because to me, watching, I was like, he got called out by a corny black dude.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So basically, you got called out by the black dude who is black, yes, but is... Who could be, like, if he, like, if Miles is the white dude that's kind of black, he got called out by the black dude that's kind of white.
Right.
And I'm like, and that was that black dude's boss up moment. And I'm like, that's what it was. Like, this corny ass dude had a boss up moment because he ain't fuck with you. And I'm like, dude, that whole, and again, I totally understand, like, you couldn't make a whole movie about that. I don't think you could. I don't know how you would. But, like, that, from that moment to the end of that argument, I was like, I fuck with it. Like, that I like.
Right.
Like, it just, it made It made sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the thing is, everything before, like, I guess they did drop some stuff like that, but, like...
Yeah, it was spring. So, okay, so, oh yeah, we skipped it. I mean, that beginning, that opening scene with that purple...
Great. Funny.
That was so funny. Yes, and that's when we get to, like, the green juice thing, and then, you know, we go... They work in a moving company. His ex-girlfriend...
Val...
is the front desk. She's the one who, like, assigns them the shifts and things like that. She got them the job. Mm-hmm. But Miles hates her because she never visited him in when he was in prison. And
she only called
and she broke up with him. Yeah. And she called him once. And she's just, like, basically not really forgiving him for the fact that he went to jail. And we don't know yet why he went to jail.
What's up, folks? This podcast is sponsored by Earnin. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn could be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day, or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Think about it. Say you're going out for a special date, or it's getting hot, y'all. You might need a fresh outfit for brunch or something nice, or maybe you just want to feel good and take yourself to dinner. Earnin can help you today. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine. Enjoying Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Mm-hmm. Download Earnin today. That's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Jump Under Podcast when you sign in. It'll help the show out. Jump Under Podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period. See earnin.com/DOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
So you open Google Chrome on your phone. You're hunting for a super rare first edition vinyl of a band you're obsessed with when you're supposed to be working. But this site you tapped on seems pretty shady. And Daryl from IT just jumped up from his desk. Oh no. He's coming your way. It's a good thing built-in malware protection keeps you safe and sound. Not from Daryl, though. Sorry. There's no place like Chrome. Download Google Chrome on your phone.
Priceline presents Go to Your Happy Price. What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. You can see yourself already there. It's beautiful. It might be sunny and sandy for some, neon and urban for others, deserts or rainforests or hiking trails. With Priceline, you can get to your happy place for a happy price with deals you really can't find anywhere else. Like up to 60% off select hotels to Costa Rica or 5-star hotels for 2-star prices in Cabo. Go to Priceline.com and travel to your happy place for a happy price. All right, see ya. I'm off to Miami. No, actually, wow, look at that. No, I'm going to Hawaii now. Ooh, Cancun looks nice. You know what? Belize looks pretty nice this time of year. Or, Palm Springs.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, this is Will Arnett. We are inviting you to follow us as we go on tour and we take our podcast Smartless on the road. Join us and watch any boundaries we previously had disappear. Like you've never seen us before, you'll see us on the road ordering lunch, roasting each other, and on stage as we surprise each other with a mystery celebrity guest in each city. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Welcome to Smartless!
Don't miss our new series, Smartless on the Road, streaming May 23rd, only on Max. Subscription required.
I like the fact that, I liked that some of these things were the relationships were established and there was all this, you know, backstory that we didn't really find out, but then they found ways to say the backstory without making it feel super exposition or,
I wish there was more I personally don't I personally was really opposed to the way Val was written. Maybe it was written how she performed it. I don't know. Like, I wish there was more of, I know her. The actress's name is Jasmine in real life. Mm-hmm. She's from Hamilton, I guess. Mm-hmm. She plays Raphael's girlfriend. Because like, maybe this is a thing again with the authenticity of.
Wait,
it.
Raphael plays Miles.
Miles, sorry, Miles's girlfriend with the baby.
Okay. You hate how
no,
she was.
No,
written?
I wish I had more of her and less of Val.
Oh, okay. Because
I didn't like how Val was written. Because, and this is, and hear me out. I totally understand wanting to have. Wanting your spouse or your partner to do better and like get things out of the way, but I feel like either the way it was written or maybe how she was told to perform it, there wasn't that nuance of softness and understanding. Like I saw it like in one scene, mm-hmm. but then it quickly went away into an argument, which I get definitely happens in real life. But I'm like, if you from around a certain way, you know the people you're dealing with, and you have a reason for not wanting to either deal with drug dealers because, like, maybe, you know, if you've seen the violence, you want to get out. You have these certain things. But to establish this relationship where, like, oh, this person really needs to care about, like, Colin really needs to care about her, right? But there were so few instances in this movie to me that showed that she really gave a shit about him and verbally said it. Whereas if I look at how, like, Jasmine's character was tough. Like, she wasn't about the bullshit. Like, she's like, hey, man. Like, there's certain instances in this where, like,
right.
Maybe the two characters weren't from the same area, but, like, Jasmine felt like
they were from the same area and they were different people, which I like that they were different.
I guess I just wanted...
Because it showed two different ways of how people deal with that, you know what I mean?
I guess, but to me it's like, when I think about how Jasmine's character went down, she definitely was loving, definitely not about the bullshit,
right.
But you saw concern, like you saw toughness mixed with a little bit of softness.
Right.
You saw like how, I don't know, how people have recognized look. But when it came to Val, it was just, and yeah, maybe you're right, maybe it was just a straight hardness because that's who she was, but I feel like there was nothing that was really presented about why she felt the way she did. Like, for instance, when it came to Jasmine, Jasmine had a kid. Jasmine was like, we got to do these certain things for the mm-hmm. kid. Did you feel fear in this moment? Mm-hmm. How, like, let me know why you're picking the wrong fight right now. She said things about, like, why she was coming at him right. a certain way, whereas Val was just like, she was just doing, like, shady remarks, which is cool,
right.
And I get those people exist. It was just like, I just wish they would have...
Well, they did get to that in the conversation about blind spotting.
Okay.
Like, so when they have this, so just Val is studying for, she wants out. She doesn't want to be in this neighborhood.
Which makes
right?
sense.
Like, she, where, which, and that's different from Jasmine. Jasmine is, I think Jasmine is similar to Miles in that she loves the Bay. She hates the gentrification. You know what I mean? Like, she likes her neighborhood. That being said, she also is, like, a mother and smart and wants to protect her son, you know? But it seems like Val is, like, the type of person who's, like, I don't relate to this neighborhood. I hate, like, freaking these, like, goons acting like goons. You know, I don't want it that. I'm with David because he's not that. And then he did something that she realized, oh, my God, like, you're just like all of the other people. I don't want to be with you. And David the whole time is, like, he's hanging on to the fact that she clearly cares, like, she had some sort of relationship with him. She clearly cared about him before. And so it's like she's doing these things that keeps him hanging on. She got him the job. She, like, keeps, like, telling him, like, you know, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. And so he's doing all this stuff throughout the movie. He gets the green juice and he's like, hey, look, like, I'm drinking the green juice. But then she, like, almost immediately shades him for that.
She's like, yeah, you should be, that's not the only thing you need to do to be healthy. Or
yeah.
Something like that.
And he's like, okay, well, I'm just saying, like, you know, he's done almost this whole year without violating his parole. You know, he's telling her, like, you know, whenever these bad things come up, like with the gun, he's like, it wasn't me. Like, you know, I was trying to get out of this situation, blah, blah, blah. And then she's just basically just blaming him for all the stuff. And in a way, she becomes a kind of, she is somewhat representing the way that there's, like, this certain part of the world and within the Black community that's like, nah, like, all the bad stuff that's happening to you is your fault. What's his name? The dude, his, like, parole officer.
Our parole officer, yeah.
It's similar, right? It's just like, well, you shouldn't have done that thing. Like, F you. Like, I don't care that you can't get here at 11 or whatever. Like, I don't care about your excuses. Like, you're a convict. You are a con until you prove otherwise. Like all of the, allowances or forgiveness or mercy has been stripped away. And, like, you have to prove yourself at all times. Which is this thing that's placed upon Black people that's not placed upon white people. Like, white people, like, they get second chances, they get the benefit of the doubt, you know, they get to redeem themselves, they get, you know what I mean? There's all this stuff. It's like the freaking judge, what's that dude, Brock Turner, whatever, like the kid who
Who got out.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, well, this shouldn't ruin his life for, like, one mistake.
Yeah.
Could you imagine, like, you know what I mean? It's insane. So,
no,
like,
people die for Lucy's.
It's insane. And so to me, it was like she was kind of representing that. And then but they get to this conversation where, because she's studying for the thing and she's like, oh, yeah, you helped me out. Like, you told me if I make up a slang word for these definitions, it helps me remember them better. And there was the picture of the two faces or the vase, you know, very classic psychology picture or whatever, like, what do you see? So you can either, if you concentrate on the Black, you can see a vase. If you concentrate on the white, or maybe the opposite way around,
I can't remember what it is now. Yeah, you had it right. You had it right.
And if you concentrate on the white, you'll see two faces. And so eventually she calls that blind spotting, and because she says, oh man, I mean, this is the best line in the movie for me. I'm trying to get the exact thing. It was something to the effect of, because he says, well, once you know that they're both there, you know, can't you just see both? And she says, no, that's not how it works. Like, your brain is so conditioned to see things one way that to see it the other way, like, you always will see it that way first. And to see it the other way, you have to, like, really work hard to change it. And that's really hard to do, you know, which is kind of like, for me, it was talking about inherent bias and racism. And it's like, yeah, it's so, we can talk about not wanting to see things one way in terms of race, but to actually be able to not look at a Black man and think threat, you have to train yourself you have to undo that with, like, an intention. Like, you really have to train yourself hard to do that. And then he literally says, like, when you see, after, you know, after that fight, like, did you see, you know, am I being blind spotted or whatever? Like,
do you see the fight first?
Yeah, do you see the fight first? And she's quiet because she's like, yeah, like, I, I, I can never not see you that, like, I'll always think of you that way. And to be fair, it could also just be like, she's a woman and she has a right to like feel fear for her own life. And maybe she has a fear for herself in that too. They didn't talk about that, but.
It's just something about it. It just felt like.
But you're right. She doesn't have the softness. Like she doesn't have.
But it's not even, you know what it is? It's not even that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just like, if she is a person from around the way. And again, I'm not saying she has to be soft to him at all. Like, you can shade this dude all you want. Like, yeah, you don't want to be around somebody who's violent. But it's almost a thing of just that line of, yo, I've been around here. I've seen violent dudes. I don't want to do this thing. It just felt like, it felt like you didn't know the area or the person you were dealing with. It felt mm-hmm. like, it felt like all this was new and all this was like, I don't get why. You know what it is? It felt naive. It felt like, I don't get why this is happening. And I'm like, what the fuck you mean you don't get what's happening mm-hmm. right now? You know what area you're in. You know what type of lifestyle people are living. Not saying you got to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Not saying you got to accept it. It's just like, you know what this is. So don't shade my man. And the thing is, especially if you're looking at a dude, and I totally understand. She's like, yo, this dude's going to keep being a problem for you. Yada, yada, yada. Like, I understand trying to break it down to him. But it just felt like her character didn't recognize where she was. It felt like if... Like, if her character was a white woman who came from the suburbs, who just popped up into, like, the hood and was like, I don't get why it's so bad. Just don't do this thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you heard the story and you know from the third party dude that he tried his best not to fight this white dude.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And to me, when that situation was going down, I was like, oh, maybe she's now going to understand that he tried his best not to do this thing and that his boy was the one who was fucked up. So I was like, oh, maybe she didn't know. That's why she was shading him. Like, yo! My man tried. Like, and again, I'm not saying it was okay to fight this hipster dude. I'm just like, you ain't giving my man no credit. Like, you're not even, again, like, if you're not going to sympathize with anything that's happening in the hood, I get that. But then it's like, I don't need to necessarily root for this woman or this relationship because you're not, it doesn't feel honest. Oh, you're not supposed to?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't get it.
I don't think you're supposed to.
Because my thing is this. Every time that Miles...
Because here's the thing. I think that despite everything you're saying, I completely agree with you. I think that there are going to be some women listening to this and going, no, she's absolutely right. He's going to be like that all the time. It's done. He should never have done that. I'm done with him. Write him off. Done.
Well, to me, and again, you have every right to do it. Right. But then in the movie, I guess, I don't know.
Because he's trying to... But do you? Because, I mean, like, because he's... I mean, for me, and this gets into like a faith thing. Like, I think that people should, you know, like we all deserve forgiveness and the chance of redemption. And that's what he was trying to do. He was like, he knows that he made a mistake. He knows that he messed up. You know, regardless of whether or not it was fair that he got all the punishment and his boy didn't, obviously that's unfair. And like, and the system is so hard on him, even though the other dude is the one who started the fight first. It's still like he knows he made a mistake, and he's trying to redeem himself for it. And she's like not having it. And again, to me, it's like very symbolic of a society, the society that we live in, that's just like not allowing people to better themselves after they've made a mistake because you just want to write them off as like, no, you're just a violent person. Done. I'm done with you.
Yeah.
You
and it
feels cruel from coming from her because she was his.
Well, yeah. I mean, and girl. I guess, yeah. And I guess like if that's the point, Kuhu, I got you.
Yeah.
It's just that when I'm looking at this character, I'm like, there's no. And again, like you're probably right. That's probably exactly how it was written and probably how she was told to perform it. It was just like that didn't feel authentic to the area, and yeah, there's probably people like that. So, her character was just right. hard for me to swallow.
I hear you.
And it was a performance, and it was her. I was
and you wanted to like her.
I mean, I was trying my best because I was like, because my thing is because they spent so much time on her.
Yeah.
And to me, like, Jasmine was the one who I don't remember her character's name in it, but like Jasmine's character was the one who, to me. Had that nuance of a fight, but also nuance of like, I get what we're trying to fight through. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm trying to fight through it. You're trying to fight through it.
Ashley.
My kid is here.
That's her character.
The character name is Ashley. Mm-hmm. Like that. And again, I'm not trying to compare the two women. It's just like, man,
no.
Why did the hood one, the quote unquote hood woman, get so little, but yet the bougie one, if you will, didn't. It just like
But I mean, they were also like mirroring their partners a little bit. Like, dude, I mean, like Colin is supposed to be a little bit boozier than Raphael. Like.
I mean, but that man, God, that performance from Jasmine, like that scene, that scene with the kid and the gun. Let's keep going.
Oh yeah,
like we got.
Scene. Well, let's talk about that scene. That scene was so basically Raphael, like from the first scene, he buys a gun off this dude, and we see like this dude's a hustler, you know. He's running a bunch of side games. Like, he has a business mentality. He's a salesman. He's good at talking people up. He says like, I don't know. I make people feel good with my words. You know, we have this really funny scene with him and Tisha Campbell, where he takes a bunch of hot combs and brings them to this hair salon. And he stands up and he just starts trying to sell them. And she at first is like, what are you doing? Get out of here. And then he just like kind of sweet. Like he's rapping a little bit too,
right? He is.
He's like rapping and like talking like this is what, you know. And then she's like, okay, well, how do I know that they work? And then, you know, we cut to David with the ridiculous room.
Ridiculous. That reveal was so silly. But I was like, you know, this is funny.
That was funny. That was a cool scene. So yeah, anyway, he has this gun though, and so we're at the house. They're all. What were they talking about?
Outside the house,
they were at the house, and the three adults were talking about something. I don't remember really what, but then they look over, and the son has.
Because the son gave Miles the hipster T-shirt.
That's
so,
right.
So they go in the bathroom, and like this scene, I thought was really funny. Because he hates the T-shirt because it's too tight.
It's too tight. Because
he looks like a hipster.
Yeah.
And they both just start.
But it looks good on him, but it's too tight.
They both just start cooking him up, boy. And they come back out, and the son is playing with that loaded gun. Dude, the amount of fear I felt in my heart.
Oh, my God. Tessa grabbed my hand and wouldn't let go. It was the scariest moment.
Dude, it was one of those things of... Honestly, I was like, yo, because at this point in the movie, once we realized it wasn't going to be about the police and them coming after him, I was like, all right, we're...
That's right. We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah.
Because that happens very early in the movie.
But, and the thing is, like, we can get to that two-thirds in. I'm like, what's the climax about to be? What's the conflict of this movie? And when I saw that kid with the gun, I was like, no, don't make it be this. No, don't make it be this.
Right, yeah.
Because this is my thing. It's hard because, oh, my God. Oh, do I still have it? So my coworkers... So it's like four young people in my job. One has two kids, and we're all black. All, you know, just two guys, two women. And we all kind of have different backgrounds. But, you know, I don't know if people noticed this week or this past week, a judge had to step in and stop this alt-right guy from releasing how to make
3D printed
assault rifles, though.
Even though he already...
He already released a gun one.
Right.
But he was trying to release the assault rifles.
So, are you serious?
Yeah, he was trying. So that's what they stepped in, and Trump was like, so basically Trump was on this dude's side, but people stepped in for the assault rifles, which technically by law they can't stop for too long. So they had this guy, you know, being interviewed, and he's talking about like why he should be able to do it, and legally he can do this, right?
Right.
And so my coworker sent out this thing of this young black girl, maybe 5 or 6. She has a blindfold, and her dad has her just reciting things like. Where he goes, who are the Black Panthers? She tells you who the Black Panthers are. Like, what's your amendment rights? She does all, like, she's doing this, but while she's doing it, she's blindfolded and she's assembling an assault rifle. Like, she's doing it, and she's like doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And my coworker sent this out and he's like, hey man, do we feel like, he's like, what do you guys think about this? Because I don't know why, but he's like, what do you think about this? I'm like, look, man, everyone's like, hey, we don't believe in guns, but then I go, but the world that we live in, does. You know what I'm saying? Like, we may not believe, like I tell people, whenever you want to watch, you should watch that HBO documentary on Martin Luther King, his last 3 years. He talks about it. Like, this nonviolence thing is something that we as African Americans do, but we're not being, like, we're being, like, we're walking up with nonviolence, but the people who are, like, confronting us are not. And so when I'm seeing the little boy with that gun, I was like, oh my God, this is such a terrifying thing, but also there's so many people with guns in their homes. Is it better to teach this kid about this gun now, or should we shield, Like, for instance, when they took the gun away, I'm like, should they talk to him about it, about, like, what it does, like, the power behind it, or should we just say guns are bad? Like, I don't know what the, like, there were so many questions. One, I didn't want him to kill himself, but also as a person who's getting older, like, if I had a kid, I don't know right now what I would do, because I don't believe in violence, but the thing is, man, watching that dude talk about guns and then seeing footage of young white kids just assembling assault rifles, I'm like, bruh, like, I can teach my kid to turn the other cheek, but, like, these niggas gonna try to kill you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, the president literally, like, vouched for this dude.
Right.
And he's trying to tell you how to assemble an assault rifle. And then they literally ask him, hey, man, what do you think about kids or, like, you know, people with mental disabilities getting a hold of this? And he goes, would you stop them from reading a book? And the woman goes, we don't teach you how to really make a gun in a book unless you have, like, a, you know, a system to do it.
Would you stop them from reading a book?
Legitimately, that's what he says. Legitimately says.
What?
Legitimately says. And then he goes, and he's like, but you know, 3D prints are different. You can buy those offline. And she's like, you know, all they would have to do is find the bullets if they can make the shell of the gun, and it's untraceable. And he goes, you wouldn't stop somebody from reading a book? And I was like, what?
No.
And that kind of, but like, it doesn't make sense, but you understand, like, this man said that with a straight face.
I know he said
And
that.
At the end of the day, certain laws can protect him, and I'm just thinking in my head, like, yes, this kid had this gun, and I was terrified he was going to shoot himself, but I'm like, should we now live in a world where we have to teach this kid? Because basically now, like, DeVos Collins' mom gave him a pamphlet on The Talk.
Right.
And The Talk is not about sex. Mm-hmm. The officially, which is crazy. Like, I mean,
yeah, but didn't it break your heart when
oh my God,
when David was getting angry and he was like, stop, and he goes, don't shoot, don't shoot. I mean,
and it wasn't a joke.
It wasn't a joke. And then she thought it was. She was like, oh, he's practicing the stuff that we taught.
Yeah, and she said, I can't, like, we can't. He's not old enough for everything in the book. But you know, I was like, oh my, like, this is the talk that kids have to have.
Right.
That's if we had kids right now, we would have to tell them how to deal with police.
Oh, of course.
Isn't that some crazy shit?
Yes.
Like, this is crazy. And the thing is, I'm like, I don't know.
I hear what you're saying about the guns. I do think.
I don't want people.
You're right. You're right in the. Here's what I'll say personally about it, since this is a political podcast now.
I mean, I don't know, man. I'm not trying to make it.
I do think that. I think you're right in that it's important to teach children about these kinds of things. It's important to teach them. It's important that they know so that for their own safety, like, they should know what a gun is. They should know, like, what a safety is. They should know what it means for a gun to be loaded. They need to know that guns can kill, that guns kill people, like, that it's a tool, it's a weapon used to murder, and it's very easy for it to do so, even more so than, like, a knife, right? So I do think knowledge is key, but, like, I'm not, the thing is, and, like, what the statistics are, is that you are more likely to shoot somebody that you know, you're more likely to shoot your own family member. There's more likely to be a suicide with a gun than there is for you to, like, stop a burglar coming and robbing your house or whatever. Yeah. You know, so it's like, even like him, like, it's like, okay, he had the gun, he didn't lock it up, and somebody was like, oh, he should have locked it up. But I've heard pro-gun people go, no, don't. It doesn't make any sense to lock up your gun, because then what's the point? If somebody comes into your house and you have to go grab a key and unlock your gun, it's already too late. So I need to keep my gun under the pillow.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? And it's like, and then it's like, I just teach my children how to use the gun, and so they're safe with it. But that's assuming that children are smart enough to use it in a proper way. You know what I mean? Like, I was a kid who I knew how to use knives, but in ninth grade, I took one of my, you know, the, like, knife sets, like those Miracle Blades.
Oh,
because
yeah.
We watched an infomercial on television, and we saw, like, people just going, like, chop, chop, chop. And they were just, like, chopping all this stuff, like, cutting leather shoes and things like that. And I was like, oh, we have those. And then my friend Mark was like, let's cut something. And so we froze stuff. We froze an orange. And then we tried to cut it. He tried to cut it. He couldn't do it. And then I was like, I can cut it. Like, and then I cut, like, the tip of my finger off because I was, you know what I mean? And it was like, because I was a dumb kid doing dumb, like, why am I trying to cut a frozen orange?
And the thing
you know what I mean? Like,
And it's so tricky because we live in a society where I was watching, now we're talking about this kid.
And that kid actor is so good.
Great. He was so cute, man. Oh my God, so happy. So cute. Oh my goodness. But then when he does the hands up, don't shoot.
Woo!
It hurt because I'm thinking, if you're a black kid, how long do you get to be a kid?
Yeah.
Because thinking about it, we always think about the situation where, you know, in movies, and this movie talks about basically the penal system and what's it like to be, you know, a convict. And again, like, I mean, we're not about to get into history, but a lot of African-Americans have been put in jail for, like, what people would consider smaller crimes, like selling weed, for instance. Mm-hmm. Not even
possession.
Yeah, in possession. Like, not even selling crack. But it's so funny because, again, crack is the same fucking thing as cocaine. But yeah, those motherfuckers, whatever. But the point is, I'm looking at this kid, and then if this kid, he's probably, what, 8, right? Mm-hmm. If he was to get in trouble, that kid probably would be tried as an adult. Mm-hmm. That's what just happens. And listening to you bring up, like, the Brock Turner kid, I'm like, oh, yeah, this little motherfucker, the judge says his life shouldn't be ruined because of this. Right?
Got 6 months for rape.
Which is crazy. And it's crazy, and it's a thing. When I'm looking at these movies, and I love that these movies exist. Again, we have this movie. Sorry to Bother You kind of talked about, you know, like, corporations and do they really care about, you know, you, the consumer, African-Americans. Then we have, you know, The Hate U Give coming out, which talks again about police brutality. We have, you know, Black Klansman. I'm so happy these movies are coming out, but for some reason, these movies are hurting my heart because it's just showing it. I'm not calling it a trend, is not the right word, but something is happening in our society where we're so, like, this is happening on such a regular basis that this is the topic of the time.
It's one of those things where it starts. Whether this is true or not, for me, it starts to feel meaningless when every pop culture thing or, like, so many Black-led things are talking about the fact that there is police brutality. Because if it's happening everywhere in our art and then nothing is being done, then it's just like, what are we doing? Like, we're not... It's not effective.
But then the question...
And we just keep putting it out there.
But the question, I think, at that point is, what is left to do? You know what I mean? Because I always think about...
No, I agree, yeah.
Because I'm like, we're not mad at the movies. No. It's like, the movies need to exist, but it's like, we have the movies.
Because they're reflecting real life.
Yeah, we have the marches. And I'm thinking about, even, we talk about, like, I feel like this is like the 100th time we talked about this on this podcast, but it's like...
There is something about, does Hollywood, like, always need to, like, do they, I don't know. It feels weird knowing that there's a boardroom of white executives that are like, ooh, like, oh, it talks about police brutality. Yeah, that's in.
That's top, that's, I mean, literally, I'm reading this article from Variety, and it's like, How did it start?
I mean, this stuff started in 24. You know what I mean? Like, we started, like, this stuff's been happening for a super long time. But it's like the Black Lives Matter, for instance, started in like 2014, right? Like, that new wave of movement, and it's been 4 years. And has it eased up at all?
The thing I think about all these movements and things like that is that when I think about Black Lives Matter and how people address them, it just reminds me of the same thing that happened with the Black Panthers, where, you know, they have done everything nonviolent. Everything they have ever done has been nonviolent, mm-hmm. right? The marches. There was that one situation in Texas, but we now know it wasn't them who started that altercation, right? But it's so difficult because we live in a world where they aren't being credited as a peaceful activist group. A lot of people consider them a hate group. You know what I mean? That's literally, they're considered a hate group. So at the end of the day, it's like, I guess these movies need to exist. It's just a thing of, I'm not sure anymore of how to fight changing a mindset. Like, but back in the day.
Right. Like, is this any of this getting through?
Yeah. Cause back in the day, like, we, you know, our parents, our grandparents, they were marching for equal right, the right to vote, to right to go to the same school, like things that were tangible that you could change, and now you're fighting to change a racist person's mindset of you. And I don't know how
and I don't know either. And that's that line in the movie about blind spotting, about how hard that is to do, was so poignant. But there were no answers because I guess there really aren't any right now. I mean, or there are, but.
I mean,
it takes. I guess the answer is, like, people have to want to change, because if they don't, they never will. Yeah. So And I think there's just large portions of this country like who just don't want to change.
Well, the thing is, they don't think they need to. A lot of people, like, I mean, I think about I think about some of the older people in my family who dislike older white people because they're like, no, this is what happened when I was growing up. Like, a white cop in the South will do this thing. And they're just so adamant because that's their whole 70 years of life has taught them this is how the world works. And that's what they pass down unless the kid learns otherwise. But getting back to, like, that situation of, like, we skipped over is, like, really early on in the movie, Colin Devee Diggs is going home. And he's
sitting at a red light that won't turn, which was so, it's so funny. Yeah. Like, I've totally been there, like, you know, because in your mind, you're like, don't run that red light. Like,
yeah, don't do it. Because he thinks about
it. Because you know he's thinking about it. But it's so true. Like, you're sitting at a red light. There's no cars around. And you're like, this is pointless. Like, it's not dangerous for me to run this red light. This red light is not doing anything, but I have to sit and wait here for 5 minutes for this thing to turn.
And I'm going to be late.
But then a black dude runs, like, right when the light turns green, it runs right in front of the car. Then you see a police running after him, and then he's like, stop. And then the police takes out his gun and, like, shoots the student in the back and kills him.
Yeah.
And then he's told
to... Man, we're turning into a political podcast. Let me not. I just don't... Fuck it. I don't care.
This is a political movie. I don't fucking get it.
And when I'm looking at stuff like this, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what happens. Like, this dude got shot in the back 6 times. Like, we've heard this story in real life. Like, this is literally a story we've heard in real life.
I mean, we've seen the video.
Yes. I mean, literally, and now knowing that Devee Diggs lived near Oscar Grant where he was murdered, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a thing that happened when a dude was technically already
handcuffed
subdued.
And on the ground, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Already subdued. An accidental shooting. And I keep thinking about these fucking white kids who can not only kill a bunch of people, but make it to prison.
Yes.
Like, make it. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this movie, and I'm like, yeah, man. And again, I saw this movie with a largely white audience. There was one older black couple in there. And, like, I'm looking at people nodding, right? I'm looking at people nodding, like, yeah, man. Like, these are the allies, right? Like, these are the allies that you need. And in my head, I'm like, man, if there's so many allies, how does this keep happening? You know what I mean? Like, I guess we're in New York, so it's a sanctuary city. I get it.
No, but F that, because that all this stuff happens in New York, it happens in LA, it happens in the big cities. Happens in the big cities where supposedly all of our allies are all the time, right? Like, Eric Garner happened here, Amadou Diallo happened here. Like, it happens here. Mm. It happens here with our police department. So it's not like these things are happening in, like, the racist South towns only. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the time it's happening in some big city, you know?
Yeah.
So I think and you're right, it's like, what happens? Why? They nod in the theater, they nod when we hear it, but whenever something comes up, and this is the blind spotting thing that he's talking about, cops get the benefit of the doubt, hands down, no matter what, cops get the benefit of the doubt. Well, what was he doing? What did the guy do? What was he doing? And then, I mean, like, it was really cool in, like, the movie where he's like, where Raphael's like, watch. He's
yes,
like,
that part
okay,
was look, great.
Okay, there's a professional photo. Watch, it's coming. There you go. Why you got to put him in a jumpsuit? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, they used his mugshot instead of just his regular photo.
What was that?
Because they're already subliminally, the news does that. They subliminally justify the murder of people because why was it important to know that, you know, Trayvon Martin, like got in an altercation at some bodega. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why is it important to know that somebody, like, stole something? It's like, it had nothing to do with what was happening. Stealing something has nothing to do with shooting somebody in the street. Yeah. You know, what's really happening is that cops are trained and told and given the power to be the ultimate authority. So if you don't listen and do what they say, doesn't matter if what they say is justified or not, if you don't do that, they have the right to kill you.
Yeah.
Which is insane. And think about the people who go into the police. And this is the thing that like makes me so sad. And, like, I don't know how to fix it other than, like, honestly, like, just redoing the entire system. Is that the people who go into the police force, they know that that's what they're going into. They know, they're doing it so that they can get that power. These are people who are power hungry. It's like, and yes, it's not all cops, but you know what? Honestly, I don't know. It's not the majority of cops.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whenever I hear that, I'm like, okay, but, like, isn't it most cops, though? Because I know, like, the people in my high school who went into the police force. And they're not the people who are, like,
who are
just like, oh, I just want to defend the innocent and, like, make sure people don't get hurt. You know what I mean? They might say that at the end of the day, but, like, so many people are, like, people who were bullies in high school. You know what I mean? Like, the people who want power. They feel bad that, you know, they couldn't get ahead in some other place in life. And so they go into this position where they can come to you and tell you what to do. And if you act up, they get to throw you in jail or beat you up.
Or beat you up.
Or kill you.
Yeah, man, the thing that's so tricky is, like, I remember, like, watching Miles watch the news. I remember there was that thing on Twitter maybe years ago when people started posting. It's so sad. But it was like, if they were murdered by the police or whatever, what photo to use.
Right.
So people started posting, like, their best photos. So it was like, this is the photo I would want you to use, and this is the photo the news would find and use.
Right.
Which is, like, the one time, like, you got two, like, a peace finger up or a middle finger, and you're 14, right. But you're, like, a 33-year-old man. Right, it's like, right. Why would you use that photo?
Right.
Oh, because you're, like, a thug.
Right.
So that was the thing that was very important. But also, I'm happy that they didn't focus on that. Like, he had that nightmare. Yeah. He had one scene which I thought was really cool.
The great when he was jogging.
Was that
Did you like
it?
That scene?
No, it was one before that though.
Okay,
it was like he had a nightmare, but it was he was in the courtroom, and this is where the rap.
Yes,
happened. And they had the chains.
I like that a lot.
Like that scene, I thought was actually
that was so cool,
so inventive.
Yes, so it was like he was there, and then like Raphael was like
his lawyer.
It was unclear if he was defending him or prosecuting him.
Tell.
But he just like was like rapping and he was there in chains, and then he kept like spitting up bullets, and then the jury were all black, but then they were also in chains, and then like the judge was the police officer who did the shooting. Mm-hmm. And then there was another kind of dream-like sequence where he's jogging, doing his routine, jogging through the
that's
graveyard.
At the end of the movie, right?
Yeah, close to the end of the movie, and he sees all the black people like, in hoods next to their graves. That was chilling.
I could that part
that was chilling.
That part I couldn't hang with that. I mean, man, it was too much. And then even we didn't talk about this in like the Black News, they like Netflix has started casting for their Central Park 5 or whatever. And I'm just thinking like, man, there's so much. Like, and the thing is, like, these things just aren't ending. It's just not, it is exhausting, man.
Right.
It is exhausting to talk about this on a regular basis. It's exhausting to watch these movies. It's exhausting to watch the news. I mean, like, this dude was just standing, and it's so crazy. It's because I heard the older black couple who was sitting near me go, what did she say? One of them mouthed, like, kind of towards the end of the movie, like, when it was over. Mm-hmm. Man, that was a lot of bodies, a lot of black men or something like that. And then one of them responded, there's millions more of that.
Right.
And I was like, my God. Because you think about it, that shot had like 30 people.
At first I was looking at it, I was like, damn, that's a lot of people. And then I was like, I was like, that probably is like somewhat of a representation of like all the people. Like we can start naming the names and it's like, yeah.
I mean, that. Man, that scene was crazy. And the thing that's so interesting about it is that, we skipped around. I think it's fine. Mm-hmm. We get to the end, and they get to that last house. Mm-hmm. I immediately knew. I was like, something's off about this house.
Well, yeah.
I was like, because the thing is, I knew you're like, right. Where is, like, how can we ever saw this cop again?
What's so weird is that, I don't know why at first I thought it was the black guy's house. And I was like, wait, did he live in this nice neighborhood?
What black guy?
Who got shot. I thought it was the dude who got shot at first because I was like, oh, man. And then I realized, like, wait a minute. No.
Yeah.
It's the cop.
And the thing is, I didn't know how this scene was going in, man. I was like, clearly the wife is leaving him. Like, he's in here somewhere. He's going to be mad. I didn't know how it was going in. I mean, again, like, I totally understand the pulling the gun out and having this altercation because you're still having nightmares on it. Because, matter of fact, this is the scene right after the running scene. You know what it is? It's just difficult because I think as a black man and being in that moment, I know I've said on this podcast, one of my favorite scenes I've ever seen in a movie was a super fly when he beat the hell out of that racist cop who, like, killed somebody for no reason. Two people killed two people for no reason. When I'm looking at this scene, I didn't want him to do the cop any harm. I just wanted him to say everything we can't. You know what I mean? And I get that he kind of was. And I understood the need for the rap. Like, I get, like, that was the device. I'm like, man, to have a scene where you get to speak for everybody. That, like, you get to speak for the frustration. You get to speak for, like, the mere fact that I think about LeBron. I've been thinking about LeBron James a lot this week, right? Like, last year during the finals, LeBron James had someone spray paint nigger on his house, right? Mm-hmm. And he comes on, he's like, yeah, man, you know, I may be LeBron James, but, like, at the end of the day, I'm still a black man in America, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this man who dedicated, was it 30 to $50 million of his own money on top of investments to open a school that will guarantee if you can make it into college, a certain college, we will pay for you to go in there, and to have the president of our country call not only the person interviewing him a dummy, but implies that, oh, you're so dumb, you made this guy who's also dumb look smart, and this guy just made it so that kids can go to a school for free, and also that people who didn't get their diploma can get their GED for free.
Yo, but why, yo, no, why he end the tweet with, I like Mike.
I like Mike better. I like Mike better.
I like Mike.
And first off, the thing that's so idiotic about that type of shit is that people don't know that Michael Jordan has been funding kids to go to college for decades. He just doesn't talk about decades.
What a troll. Decades. It's so weird that the president of the United States is an internet troll.
Yes.
Is a powerful one of internet. The worst internet trolls, but an internet troll who has 50 million followers and gets millions of retweets.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is insane. This is what we live in. And so to me, it's like when I don't know. And you know what? And maybe it's not. And again, the movie isn't bad, but I'm thinking maybe like this movie did everything right. And everything, I think if we made a movie about this, we would probably almost do something along the lines of this. It's like, man, I just wanted that moment of just. And I guess he did. I guess for me, it was like, I just wanted.
Well, he was no making him feel the fear. He just wanted, he was like, he wanted him to feel fear. But then at the end, he was like, the difference between me and you is that I'm not a killer.
Which I get. Yeah. I get it, man. It was just like, in that moment, I don't know. Like, he did it. Yeah, I don't know. He did it. So I don't know what I'm mad about. It's just like, I just wish he wasn't right. I wish we just fucking would have said it. Like, this is what you done to us. This is what it is. Yeah. But you know what, though? Can I talk to Hollywood for like 2 seconds? This one's gonna be short. It's gonna be
wait, real quick though. Let me I don't know how to pronounce this dude's name.
Bro, I don't even.
Utkarsh M. Utkar, but he was in what movie was he in? He was in Game Over, man. He was pretty funny in that. In this, oh my god,
this dude
is so funny. He was the dude who retold the story of him beating up the white guy,
the dude from
with the flaming.
He's a rapper.
Oh, is he a rapper?
He was in the first, he's very cool with the Workaholics guys. He was in
because he was in Game Over, man, their Netflix movie.
And he's also in that movie, Pitch Perfect, the first time when he had to go against the guys.
Got it.
Like he was a rapper. He also was in the Jay Farrell movie.
He's in the
Barbershop, White Famous.
The Next Cut.
Yeah, he's in the last one. He's in the last one.
Dude is so funny.
Super funny.
Oh my god, that was so funny. All right.
Also, we're gonna do that. Now that you bring up that flashback. When they have the flashback of what happened, the fight. First off, I love the Ant-Man kind of like retelling the story that people keep doing now. I think it's hilarious. But the thing, this part was too real. Okay, I'm in it. I got in a fight with a hipster once, right? I did. I tried my best not to. But it was that entitlement. It was he spoke to him. It's like when he told that story, and this probably was one of the things that felt so real. I was like, hey, man, you can't do this thing that is illegal to do, right? I'm trying to tell you. Like, the last time I almost got in a fight was, so we were in L.A., and this reminds me of this. I was in L.A. We were going to work on the format for our show.
This just
happened maybe months ago, and I never told you. I think I told you guys pieces of it, but I'm going to say it now. So I'm in the car. I am not in an Uber pool. Okay? I am not in an Uber pool.
Yes.
All right. My driver is a foreigner, but super nice. And all of a sudden, like we get a phone call. We're literally like 2 blocks away, maybe. But LA, you know what it could take about. 2 blocks away. We pull up to a corner, like I just hear him on the phone, like, hey man, I can't. I'm dropping off somebody right now. Like, I see you next. I already accepted it. I'm going to come to get you, right? And he's like, he hangs up. He's like, yeah, man, some dude's trying to, like, you know, get me to pick him up. Like, I keep telling him it's not a pool. Out of nowhere, this white dude with a Harvard or a Princeton shirt, whatever, hops in the car. Out of no, just hops in the car. Hey, man, I'm right here. Why can't you just come get me? And starts screaming at the driver. And then I'm in the back seat, and he literally addresses me like, he's not going to be mad, or he won't be mad. First off, most utter disrespect I've ever seen in my life, right? So the part I didn't tell you guys is that the driver did not, like, the light turns green. The driver doesn't move. He's like, hey, man, you can't do this, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's like, you know what? No, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. So the guy gets out, gets in the back seat with me. Okay? Gets in the back seat with me. It's like, bro, we good, right? Bro, we good. I'm like, hey, man, you're making this mad awkward. Let's get out of here. Come on, man. Don't be like one of them. I'm like, ah. Don't be like one. Like, now we got, like, first I'm like, who's one of them? I'm like, who's one of them? I'm like, I literally got this point, like, who's one of them? He's like, come on, man, you know, like, you cool. Come on, man, we cool. You're not one of them. And like, he kept saying one of them. And mind you, you know when, like, you're getting pissed and then someone keeps tapping you, like one of the hey bro type taps, oh, and he did it. So I will admit, I'm not saying this because it's nice.
I can't believe you didn't tell
because I was mad.
In real life, and you're telling
us on the
podcast.
Because it was months, like, it's months ago now. It's months ago. I can let it go. But I need you guys to understand that I do not, again, I say this, I do not believe in violence, but I do believe in, like, you only can be so patient. My man taps me in the chest and keeps saying, you're not like one of them. So when he taps me again, I proceed to tap him back. But my fist is closed as I tap him in the chest, right? So I'm tapping him back. He's like, come on, man, don't be mad. Mind you, at this point, the driver's like, I'm not going to leave until you get out the car, right? So the guy gets out the car, finally, rolls, like, opens the passenger side window in the front and go, you know what you're getting now? One star, buddy. One star. You ain't going to be driving. I'm going to own your car. And you know what? You can take him to wherever he's going to go. I'm going to get somewhere else. He probably isn't going anywhere. And the thing in me that I'm not going to, I did scream something out of it that I'm not proud of. I screamed a couple of obscenities and like, yo, if you don't leave, I'm going to put your face through this window. And like, for some reason, I've never felt, and so I'm not defending what David Day's character did in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying to be around somebody who has so much privilege, who doesn't, to not understand the human decency of just talking to a person.
Right.
Like that dude belittled.
It makes me mad. Yeah.
Like, it's just, he literally said to him in the movie and then he pushed him in the chest.
I mean, when he pushed him in the chest.
He pushed it, and it's just only so much, and I think that's
the... And it's like, that's the dude. He's working there.
He's working. And the thing is, he's calm when he says it. He's like, hey, man, you can't... Because you legally, unless you're in fucking Vegas or New Orleans, you can't just have a drink open on the street.
Yeah.
I'm going to show my friends.
Show my friends. He's like, now you can't come back in. I pay for this drink.
And the thing that hurt me the most... Is that
what did Raphael say before?
Yo, what did he
say? He said something like, oh, damn, what did he say? He said some gangster.
I mean, first off, he looked awesome in that scene. He looked awesome. But the thing that hurt me is that when Val comes out, right? Val comes out and they're fighting, right? Because again, before Miles gets
that's
in, they're fighting.
For sure.
They're fighting, right? Yeah. And it is overkill. But the thing that bothered me is that even before the fire came, you hear the hipster dude, yo, help me. And I'm like, nigga, you start. That's that thing right there hit me so hard. Is like, you started this fight, and you're screaming, help me. Like, you're a victim in this situation. Mm-hmm. You just lost. Like, what happened was, you started the fight,
and
your boys ain't helping you out.
Right.
Like, main man told you, if you came over here, you're going to have a problem. You started this fight, both of them jumped in, and your peoples left you hanging.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I bet you this, if they were winning that fight, they wouldn't have screamed for help. They would have been talking shit. Like, they just beat up two hood dudes.
Right.
Dog, I've never wanted to fight somebody so much in my life until that day. And my driver was so goddamn innocent and nice.
Yeah.
And to see that happen, and I think it might have been a Harvard shirt. Because it was one of those Harvard cutoff in the little small-ass shorts. What the fuck are you doing with shorts that goddamn little? Like, I'm so mad.
Oh,
and boat shoes. Ah! Okay, anyway.
Damn.
At Kroger, we know the minute a tomato is picked off the vine, the fresh timer starts. The sooner we get our produce to you, the fresher it is. That's why we've completely overhauled our process to shorten the time from harvest to home for our tomatoes, strawberries, and salads. Because we know how much you love fresh produce, we give you more time to enjoy your tasty fruits and veggies at home. So whether you're shopping in-store, picking up, or prefer delivery,
We're committed to bringing you the freshest produce possible. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, this is Tim Heidecker, and I'm glad to be back in Glendale, California, in the studio with my good friends DJ Doug Pound and Vic Berger for another episode of our podcast, Office Hours Live. This week, we had a very special guest, Hiss Golden Messenger, who played a beautiful tune for us. We laughed, we had fun, and you should tune in to Office Hours Live this week, and quite frankly, every week on your podcast app of choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live.
Also, the fight between Raphael and that little black dude was a great fight.
It was a brutal fight.
It was brutal, but I just meant like the choreography was like really.
Oh yeah,
it's like because they both got some hits in, yeah. But then he just ends by just slamming.
When he slammed his head, and I was like
on the car, I was like,
I was like, man, when that shit went down, calling them, and the way the hipster dude was talking to them, calling them bro and shit,
yeah.
Anyway,
you wanted to talk
about Hollywood. I just want to say that I love that we're having these movies about like police brutality. I love that, and again, this is not me making fun of what's going on. I do understand it's real, but you know, a year or two ago, we had that run of slave movies, which I was like, hey, man, this is cool. Like we're getting our history lesson in. Now we're having this run of, you know, black people getting killed by police movies, which is like, yeah, cool, man. I see what's happening. I see what's going down. So I'm hoping we're getting through these phases. Just that is a part of like the black experience here in America is that we were slaves at one particular time. We are currently and have been for maybe the last half century dealt with police violence, which is a thing that's happened. But also, one of the things that has also been going on this year in 2018 is that African Americans have started to really take pride in who they are, our history, our lineage, our roots, our women are rocking their natural hair. Mm-hmm. We as a people, which I've been noticing slowly but surely, have stopped with the light skin dark skin thing. We're literally like supporting each other. You may hear a joke here and there. I may make one, but like we're on a team. Mm-hmm. So I hope that maybe as we go further along, maybe 2019, if you're gonna say we're gonna have a string of movies, maybe we just get back to like some black comedies where it's like, oh,
that'd be nice.
You know, we just have black people doing a bunch of different things. We saw how Girls Trip was, like, man, where's the new house party version? Or you know what? Hey, you know who I love? I love Tom Hanks. I love some Meryl Streep. How about, you know, we get some movies that, you know, would have went to them and just put, you know, Viola Davis in it, you know? Yeah. Like let's get some black movies where like, hey, we're a doctor. Yeah, you know, like we're doing some shit. You know, I've seen a movie. I think they're remaking A Star Is Born, which will be the third time this movie has existed. This time is Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. Hey, man, we've seen this movie three times. How about we make a Harriet Tubman movie? You guys love slavery movies, right? Give me a Harriet Tubman one. You know, give me one about a black woman who saved a bunch of lives and did it under white people's noses.
Aren't they making a Madison J. Walker? Is it a movie or
it's
is it
a
like
Netflix?
TV?
It's a Netflix miniseries, I believe. Which, hey,
all right,
you know
yeah, we'll take
hey,
it, we'll
hey,
take
hey,
it. We'll
hey, you
it.
Know what? Let me get that. Let me yeah, get yeah. that. And again, like, I'm not sitting here, like, trying to diss any things that you guys are greenlighting because it could have been a movie. Could have been a movie that was nominated for an Oscar, but...
George Washington Carver movie.
Oh, hey, man, George Washington Carver movie. What, brother? Hey, you know what? You know a black person who did a lot? Because people, you know what? I heard he's doing great work right now. I think, you know, a Frederick Douglass movie would be great because Frederick Douglass is... Like our president said, he heard about him and he's doing great. So you know what? The president said he's doing great.
An amazing job.
He's doing an amazing job.
Being recognized more and more.
Yeah, good for that guy. All I'm simply saying is I'm starting to notice a thing that we keep presenting these movies of the hardships that we go through as African Americans, and we know that we live it every day. What you should probably do is start teaching that in schools, Hollywood, even your schools in LA. You know, make a documentary, but also give us movies that make us happy about ourselves. Give us not just Black Panther once every century. Give us something else. Or if you don't want to do it, just give someone a check and let them do it the goddamn self. Anywho, that's all I got. The beauty of James not being here is no one has to do that goddamn Hancock thing. And I'm not. Don't you dare. No one. Cool. Let's just end it.
But we all saw Blindspotting, right?
What? Come on, man.
I'm just saying, all of us
come
in this room.
Come on, dude. We're not doing this.
I'm saying all of us saw.
We just, I'm not. Even hearing you say that makes me so mad.
Okay, I'm just saying we all saw it.
Yes, dude.
Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah.
Is that it?
No, I was just saying, but that little boy, though, that hair on that little boy.
Yeah, what about it?
Well, it was like really, it was super fly.
Yeah.
and you know, he had a gun.
Yeah.
But he didn't shoot himself.
No.
And he already learned, you know, hands up, don't shoot.
Right? I don't like any of this. Just so you know.
I'm just saying.
For people at home,
what if?
Oh, God.
What if that little boy is actually Hancock's son?
Okay. He is a mixed little boy. No, no, I'm not. I'm not encouraging.
I'm just saying.
No, no.
What if Hancock 2, Hancock 2, the prodigy.
How do we end this? How do we?
It's baby Hancock.
Okay, okay.
Flying.
Just, you know, here on Black Man Can't Jump podcast, how we review movies.
We don't review them based on how much we like them or even through a critical lens. We literally just rate our movies on how much they help the cause of more leading black actors in Hollywood.
Yeah.
If we think it fully helped the cause, we give it a black fist.
Yep.
If we think it somewhat helped the cause, we give it a white palm. If we think it didn't help the cause at all, we don't give a movie anything.
Nothing.
On the count of three, we're going to raise up our rating for this film.
Oh, yeah.
And a one, and a two, three.
Black fist!
Two black fists.
Two black fists. I go.
Okay.
Again, I honestly, it sucks. I've never had this happen. Like, I don't know why this movie didn't. Like, this movie is everything I would ever want in a movie. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I don't know why it just didn't connect for me. But I'm happy this movie exists. I'm happy what it's talking about. I'm happy that when I saw it, it was a sold-out theater. And to me, it was the audience it needed to be reached as. Like, this was a movie, not saying it was written for young white people, but I'm happy that they're seeing it, they're accepting it. Like, it was at the Sundance, it was at Sundance Festival. It is now out. People are saying it's, you know, it could be an award season contender, which is great. It was directed by a person of color, co-written by a person of color. Oh, technically, was it Raphael is half white and half Hispanic, so stars people of color, which is great. Yeah, man, I'm just happy it exists. Like, I'm happy honestly, I'm just happy it exists. I wish I gravitated towards it a little bit more, but I can't knock this movie at all. Like, it did a great job in what it was trying to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think I gave it a fist because David Diggs is, despite, you know, any problems that might exist in the movie, I think that he's going to be pretty big. I think that he will be making more movies. Hopefully, this is not his last. Even though this movie isn't a huge box office hit, I hope that it will get some awards recognition. I don't know if it will, though, actually, and that is a little bit scary. And I think that any film that covers race and police injustice and gentrification and these types of social issues in an artistic, innovative, intelligent way like this film did, I think you got to give that movie props for helping the cause. So hopefully people go see it. If you haven't, please do. And that is it for us. You can follow us at Black Men Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. BlackMenPodcast.com is our website. You can go there, check out show dates and things like that. If you are in New York, we perform on a team called Astronomy Club, and it is an improv team. We perform at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York City, in the East Village. Our next performance is next Monday at 9 o'clock. We perform pretty much every Monday at 9 p.m. now, so come out and see that. And you can follow me personally at John Braylock, JonBraylock, JonBraylock.com. You can follow James if you want. You haven't heard him. But at James Third Comedy, third is spelled 3RD. So, you know, if you want to reach out to him, maybe one day when he gets a phone that works.
Yep. Good goodness.
Gerard, do you want people following you?
Yes, you can follow me at Gerard Milligan on Twitter and Instagram. Oh, there's one person I want to shout out because I feel like he deserves it. Was it Jeffrey Taylor Jr.? He did this dope photo of us as the Bay Bay's kids.
That was awesome.
Super dope.
Oh, man. Please, fan art.
Follow that man. Like, it, honestly, I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you rate and review us on iTunes, give us 5 stars, we will read your review on the air. Okay. Oh, wow. We have a fair amount of reviews.
Uh-oh.
But here, I'll read this one. This is by Jackakix.
What was
J-A-K-A-K-K-S-K. The title is The Cure to Boring Commute. Okay. Wow. This is also an essay. I love it. People are writing. People have gotten the hint. They're like, if I write an essay, they have to read the whole thing.
Honestly, they got to read all of it. They got to read.
You guys. There we go. Y'all are the best and absolutely hilarious. The highlight of my Tuesday, Wednesday mornings while getting ready and making my way to work. I enjoy listening to black men critically examine films starring black actors and how these movies deter or advance careers. Traitor with Don Cheadle and Boomerang with Eddie Murphy are my favorite episodes yet. Keep up the good work. It would be cool if y'all did a Spike Lee series in anticipation of Black Klansman. Well, we are going to do Black Klansman, and that's coming out next week, though. All right.
Edit. For sure.
One area of improvement. Let's stop assuming that all Latinos are people of color. Stop assuming that all Latinos are people of color. I think, well, it's interesting, like this guy, Raphael, right? Like, he's white passing. It's an interesting conversation to have. I mean, not going to happen on this podcast right now. I think a think piece should be written about the idea of who we decide is or isn't people of color, and if that's based off of. Because there are Latinos, to this person's point, for instance, say you're a Latina, you're like Argentinian, right? But you look white, and the reality is your ancestry is of European descent, but you speak Spanish. Are you a Latino? And I think it's a similar thing with, like, you know, people like, you know, there are white Mexicans. You know what I mean? Like, things like that. Like, anyway, it's an interesting thing. Like, Latino is something that's such a broad label, and yeah. Anyway. During the Equalizer 2 episode, Gerard insisted that Pedro Pascal is POC because he's from Chile and that he's just extremely light-skinned. And he's saying that this is false. It's equivalent to saying that David Oyelowo is an extremely dark-skinned Englishman and not a POC black just because he's from the UK.
Wait, is that again?
I think they're saying something to the fact that, like, there are people who are from South American or Latin American countries who speak Spanish. We consider them Latino, but they have European ancestry and they're not dark-skinned. So,
oh, like Charlize Theron is not a person of color, even though she's from Africa.
Right, even though she's African.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, that. I get it.
That's interesting.
Okay, and then I'll read one more, maybe, because this one is just says blind spotting. I don't think I read this one. Don't know if y'all will see this, but I love your opinions, and I've been listening since the Creed episode. Please, please, please review the film Blind Spotting, starring David Diggs. It is a beautiful film that isn't getting much press, and I'd love to hear what you got to say about it. Well, and this happened. That's what we did.
Hopefully, you're in luck.
You listened the whole way and listened to this. All right, guys. Thank you so much for rating and reviewing. Please continue to do so. We will read your reviews on the air. Next week, we will be reviewing Black Klansman.
Yeah.
Spike Lee film. So thank you guys so much. And hopefully, James will have a working phone by then. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in 4 brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!